This is continuing coverage in the trial of Alex Murdaugh from True Crime Today.
Welcome to our continuing coverage. I'm Tony Bruschi. Day number 16 in the trial of Alex Murdaugh here on the 15th of February of 2023. Beginning of the day started out with the judge saying, yeah, you know, Cousin Eddie, we're not going to be hearing from him in court. I don't think it is relevant to the case. And in the very final moments of the day, the judge changing his mind and allowing that information on the attempted suicide, murder, whatever the heck it actually was, to be heard in court. Aside from that, today we saw a lot of video, a lot of interrogation video with Alex Murdaugh being pressed in some uncomfortable conversations with authorities on the possible guilt of Alex Murdaugh to the murders of his wife and son. Let's head to the courtroom now for segment number one.
Good morning. I'm ready. Who's first?
I'm happy to go first. Obviously, we,
Your Honor, since we filed a memo and we have not added to it, I'd be more than happy for the Attorney General to go first.
Yes, sir.
Your Honor, and I sent a memo early this morning. Hopefully, you've had a chance to see that. A lot of it reiterates what we had previously filed in our prior motions. And again, as it relates to this particular evidence, as I argued yesterday, consciousness of guilt is a very recognized class of evidence as admissible evidence of motive and identity in South Carolina courts. Obviously, we've cited a number of cases in more classic senses of consciousness of guilt evidence, such as, you know, witness intimidation, flight. But any sort of evasive action, any sort of action to evade detection or throw off the scent has been admissible in our courts. Your Honor, I see the clerk from Barnwell here, and I had a murder case in front of her not too long ago, or well, it's been a while. But in any event, in that particular case, the defendant had actually found in his car was a voodoo root. That said, you know, had on there, protect me from murder charges, save me, judge, early, protect me from murder charges. And ultimately, that was admitted and in an unpublished opinion affirmed as evidence of consciousness of guilt and evasive conduct because of what it meant to the defendant. And so I just point that out as an example as to how expansive that can be. When we look at this case, and again, one thing about this case, Your Honor, is it's intricate and complex on a scale that I think none of us have ever seen. And so we have to look at it within that vein and in that context. And what we have here, Your Honor, and why this is relevant evidence of consciousness of guilt, it really doesn't matter what exactly happened on the side of the road, because that's not the focus of what the state is seeking to do. What the state is seeking to do and what we believe is relevant and admissible under these rules is to show what the defendant said about it and the fact that that was not true. And what he said about it, of course, was that he was on the side of the road, he had a flat tire in with a car that has run flats, that he was changing the tire, and that a nice-looking, nice man stopped offering help, and then all of a sudden he was shot in the back of the head. And obviously, the initial reaction, we've heard from Ms. Proctor, we've heard and can hear from other witnesses, and the initial reaction was that, oh my gosh, the real killers are back, the bad guys are back, they've now targeted Alec. And the other thing that's crucial about this that connects it all together is not only does he make that claim, that statement about being targeted by an unknown assailant, as things were heating up on him in this investigation, that then causes people to immediately assume that he's been targeted and it has nothing, in no way could he be responsible for Moselle. But we also have to look at the symmetry of this particular event with what happened on June the 7th. And on June the 7th, as we know, and Your Honor's heard extensive testimony, both in camera and in this trial, he is confronted about the fare's fees that morning. There's all kinds of circumstances that have been put into evidence that are moving as to a perfect storm arriving on that day. And of course, what happens that night? Maggie and Paul are murdered, community rallies, everything changes. We have the same thing happening on September 3rd and September 4th, because finally, despite his best efforts, the law firm has become privy and wise to what's been going on with his years of embezzlement and theft. They confront him, but more importantly, if we go back to those Ferris fees, which are very crucial and temporally connected to everything that happened on June 7th, is the fact that you've heard testimony from Chris Wilson that he is calling Mr. Murdoch, trying to get to meet with him because he wants to know what's up. He particularly wants to know what about the $192,000 of those Ferris fees that he covered for Mr. Murdoch. And they have that confrontation on the porch of Alameda that afternoon or early, right before noon, as was testified to. And what happens? Yet again, within a couple of hours, the side of the road happens, and everyone is rushing to Alec Murdoch's aid again. The fact that he had just been exposed for embezzlement is quickly forgotten about, and of course everybody's assuming, oh my gosh, it must be the real bad guys, when in fact it was him all along. And so that is extremely relevant evidence, and it's also been, just to add into the calculus, Your Honor, is we do have the concept of what's been opened the door, what issues have been joined by the defense and put up here. And of course, that's how this issue all arose yesterday with the testimony of Miss Marion Proctor. So we think it's very admissible as clear consciousness of guilt evidence. It's admissible under 404. I've also argued, without getting in great detail, when we talk about that symmetry, we talk about common scheme or plan, and again, this isn't the kind of common scheme or plan that is typical, but we have to look at this case through a lens that recognizes just the intricacies and the complexity of a set of circumstances like we've never seen. And so all those legal theories, Your Honor, we would assert justify admission of this evidence. I will also say that this express this to the defense, that it's the state's intent to really quickly move from point A to point B. We are not here to try to litigate what happened on the side of the road in its entirety. I believe that the testimony about this could be done in you know, just over an hour, and that includes playing the recorded statement. There's a number of recorded statements, not trying to play all of those. It would just be simply having the agent come in, relate the story that Alec Murdoch told to 911 and told to law enforcement, that initial story about the unknown assailant, the fact that the investigation continued and additional information came to light that conflicted with that, and that he was eventually confronted with that, and then there's a recorded statement at the end in which he admits that, in fact, what he had told law enforcement was a lie. And so I'm trying very, it would be a very focused presentation to just get from point A to point B for purposes of this trial and the relevance that it has to this trial. So for those reasons, Your Honor, we would assert that limited presentation is admissible for those purposes.
Please support, Your Honor.
Yes, sir.
The state, and we agree that State versus Cartwright would be applicable to this situation. And it has four criteria about a suicide. They seem to think that the unmistakable nexus exists by clear and convincing evidence linking the suicide attempt to a guilty conscience about the murders. The facts are that he was confronted by the law firm on Friday, fired on Friday, and then persuades, I don't know much persuaded, persuasion was needed, Eddie Smith to shoot him in the head, thinking that it would get his son, Buster Murdoch, $12 million in insurance money that would otherwise be excluded by the suicide exemption in his insurance policy. So all this is linked to is the financial crimes, not the murder. We're here trying to murder. And yet all the evidence, not all, but a significant amount of the evidence we've heard over the last 3.5 weeks has been about the financial crimes. This is guilty knowledge of the financial crimes, not the murder. And this under 404, 403 analysis under Cartwright would not be admissible. I'd further say this, if he's looking for a common scheme, that is that when he's about to be found out or he's being found out, he would have killed Buster, based on his theory, to distract. This isn't a distraction, this is an end. And clearly, you haven't heard the taped interview, that he initiated from detox in Atlanta in which he explained he was killing himself to get this money for Buster because he had been, his financial crimes had been found out. This is 3 months after the murder. This is in September. It's not connected by time. It's not temporal under the 404, 403 analysis, and certainly it's not evidence of guilty knowledge about, I mean, his own statement would indicate it has nothing to do with the murder. It's only about the financial crimes. And he contacted Sweat, and on that recording, myself, Mr. Griffin, and Mr. Murdaugh from detox. He finally had detoxed and wasn't on drugs anymore. And he has a great detailed statement about Eddie Smith buying the drugs for him over a number of years, millions of dollars worth, and how Eddie didn't hesitate to shoot him in the head on the side of the road. I don't know how that is relevant. Now, maybe the drug piece is, but they've got statements from Eddie Smith about how many, how, what drugs he bought and what he did with those. So we would oppose going forward on any roadside shooting evidence. We think the prejudicial far outweighs the probative, and we'd ask Your Honor to not allow them to do that.
Yes, sir.
Your Honor, very quickly, I do want to distinguish again between what Mr. Harpootlian keeps wanting to argue about, and that's the prospect of there being some sort of suicide on the side of the road. Again, the state's real focus is not exactly on what happened on the side of the road. What's important, and this is, I think, different from a typical court rate such situation, is what the defendant said about it. And the fact that he immediately tells this lie about him being targeted by an unknown assailant. And that is what directly connects it back to Moselle, and that's immediately what everybody assumed. The first thing that jumped in their mind is that connection back to Moselle. That connection in the next is unmistakable. So it's not as much about a traditional type of Cartwright analysis. That's not what I'm arguing here. What I'm arguing here is his explanation for what happened and the fact that that ultimately was not true. And that nexus, I believe, is very clear. I think the other one would be clear, too, but that former nexus is the stronger one, and that is the focus of what the state is trying to offer here today.
And Your Honor, just briefly, this is character evidence, which is precluded under, the only exception to 404, 403, Your Honor's allowed in, is motive. Why did he do it? It's just incredible, because if you put this up, you're going to hear from one of the Sweat agents. When he woke up in the hospital and his skull had been fractured, he had a brain bleed. This is when he concocted that story. I mean, he expected never to wake up. So, you know, this was a scheme to draw up. No, if there was a scheme, it was created after Eddie Smith meant to shoot him. Actually, if he'd been a millimeter to the left, his brains would have been blown out. He just missed, but knocked him out, fractured his skull. That's all I have.
Your Honor, those are not the facts. He's telling that story at the scene to people who show up. He's out of the gate. That's what he's saying, that he was attacked by an unknown assailant. There's a ambulance video where the deputy comes in, and that's exactly the story he tells. This is not
I would concede he's correct. Once he realizes he's still alive, he tells that story. But obviously, he didn't intend to be still alive. Yeah. In other words, it's not a scheme that was concocted at any point. The scheme, if it's a scheme, was concocted after he realized he wasn't dead.
Well, the financial evidence was allowed on the issue of motive. This evidence, I find, goes beyond motive, or is not evidence of motive, but more toward common scheme or plan. It does not survive the logical relevancy test, and it goes more toward showing the propensity to commit violent acts, which would cause it not to survive the 403 analysis. I believe that to allow this evidence is a bridge too far, going down this path of allowing essentially any and all evidence in. We have guardrails. The court is to place guardrails to keep things within a reasonable realm. And I believe this, as I stated, will be a bridge too far. It does not meet the logical relevancy test. I agree with the defense that it would be admissible, perhaps, if the trial was a trial on the financial theft issues, but not on the murder. So I grant the motion to exclude this evidence at this time. Of course, as we have seen, things change. Who knows?
Unassured, Your Honor.
Am I right? Did we tell the jurors 10 or 10:30?
I think it was at 10:30, Your Honor.
10:30.
I said 10. Mr. Waters said 10:30. So if there's any acrimony here, please focus it where it belongs.
Well, I routinely underestimate the time, so the one time I overestimated.
Tested the jurors this morning, and happy to say that they all tested negative, so we're in good shape with the jury. All right, any other matters we need to discuss during this light time?
Yes, not. I think Mr. Waters and I were talking extensively about when he's going to rest his case. We think that should be, or he thinks that should be. He thinks tomorrow morning. I'm projecting maybe tomorrow afternoon, but on Friday we expect to start our case. And to that end, if something were to happen between now and Friday morning, we are flying in experts, and don't need to tell Your Honor how expensive that process is. So even if they don't finish, we may ask the court to allow our witness. It's a footwear expert. It's not anything of, explosive. But if he's here and they can't finish by Friday afternoon, we'd ask the court at that time to allow him to testify out of order, simply to save thousands of dollars of him have to come back the following Tuesday. And I haven't asked Mr. Waters about that, but I want to put it on
the record. I'm certainly going to be within reason accommodating to the defense and things like that.
Great. I just thought I ought to mention it so it doesn't look like a surprise to the court. Thank you, Your Honor.
Anything else then?
Stand by, Your Honor. Excuse me, please. We have anything, Your Honor.
All right. We'll take a recess then for about 15, 20, or 30 minutes, or 37 minutes. The jury is here, so if you all are ready to go, we can start before 10:30.
If they're all here, that's fine. If I could maybe just have about 10 minutes to reset and 10, 15 minutes, and then we can get started.
All right. We'll take about 15 minutes then.
That wraps up segment number one of coverage in the trial of Alec Murdaugh today, day number 16, here on the 15th of February, 2023. There's much more to come. Press subscribe so you don't miss any of our continuing coverage. I'm Tony Bruschi. Stay with us.